Kestrel started down the other side of the ridge toward the village, where 17 grass lodges were arranged in an irregular semicircle, covering the top of the hill and flowing down over the side. Each lodge faced east to receive the early morning blessings of Father Sun. Her own lodge, on the eastern side of the village, sat a little apart, surrounded by a thick grove of junipers. Cycles ago, before her marriage, she had chosen the location of this lodge for its privacy. Later, she had regretted the decision. Her husband was a great trader. He spent half of the cycle of seasons away from home, poling his raft around the huge lakes, traveling all the way to the rainy seacoast far to the north. She didn't know how she'd survived for so long alone, watching the trails, waiting, huddling in her robes at night with only the wind to talk to. Loneliness had nearly driven her mad until Iceplant came. At least Iceplant had escaped. They had split their trails to confuse the trackers, but Kestrel knew that Iceplant was running westward. He was a fast runner, the fastest in the village. He might even now be sitting on the shores of the distant ocean with his mother's people, the Otter Clan.
Thank you, Above Old Man. I know I'm unworthy to receive such a gift, but thank you for keeping him safe.
Kestrel placed a hand on their baby and thought she could feel the child's heartbeat pounding out of rhythm with her own, as Ice Plants had done when they'd lain together beneath a mound of firs last autumn. She had known the terrible chance she was taking, but she had taken it willingly, gratefully. Ice Plant's warmth had driven the cold from her soul. All winter, she had managed to hide her condition under thick layers of clothing. Not even Lambkill had suspected. She'd spent her time in the menstrual hut with the other women, pretending. But when Spring Girl began to breathe warmth over the frost-laden land, people had glanced suspiciously at Kestrel's heavy clothing. Just after Lambkill had headed north to trade with the lake people, the rumors had broken loose. At the edge of the village, Kestrel slipped on a wet rock and twisted her ankle. Her steps faltered.
You want to die here in the mud?
I'm going, Tenon.
Kestrel limped past the first lodge, made of a frame of willow poles covered with grass thatch. It resembled a shaggy bear hunched over a kill. The scents of fires smoldering, meat cooking, and damp furs drifted to her. People had gathered before a bonfire in the plaza, where flames were leaping 12 hands high. It looked like the entire village. Maybe 30 adults and 24 children were there. With Tannen announcing his arrival, people turned. Men shook war clubs, roaring. Young women covered their children's eyes to protect them from the wicked sight of Kestrel. Tribal elders hunched in several lodge doorways, sheltering from the rain, their faces twisted. Kestrel tried not to look at the beautiful geometric designs decorating their shirts. She had dyed the porcupine quills and sewn them onto the garments herself. Each color came from a spirit plant that cured different illnesses of the body or soul. Prickly pear cactus fruit produced the rich purple color, juniper berries the tan, rabbit brush the pale gold, sumac bark the beautiful brown. She stumbled past Old Buffalo Woman, her eyes lingering on the orange-pink color that she'd created from mixing lichen and holly berries. Even as a child, the need to dye and paint had tormented her, as though Above Old Man had buried love for the bright pigments deep in her bones. She could not live without her art, and her creations could not live without her. Orchestral added drops of her own blood to each color. It awakened the sleeping spirits in the dead plants and gave the designs the ability to come to life. Each elder bowed his or her head as Kestrel went by. Did none of them doubt her guilt? Had she already been judged and sentenced without so much as a chance to defend herself? She'd grown up in their midst, loved them, relied on them for guidance. Would they stand by and quietly watch her murdered? As Kestrel neared the fire, she saw her grandmother, Willowstem, and then her mother, Owl Woman, standing half hidden on the outskirts of the crowd. Though neither of them looked Kestrel's way, she could see the tears traced lines down her mother's lowered face.
Move!
Mother! Mother, please!
Owl Woman pressed a hand to her lips to keep them from trembling, but she said nothing.
Bring her here!
Lambkill was near the flames, his arms crossed over his bony chest. Short gray braids hung to either side of his head, framing his flat nose and heavy jowls. He had passed 45 summers. The orange light that danced across his lined face accentuated his age and flickered unnaturally in the quartz crystal necklace that hung over his heart. He'd woven the crystal's chain from strips of mammoth tendon. It was strong enough to pull a buffalo, he claimed. His triumphant black eyes sparkled darkly as Kestrel came forward. Her heart pounded so hard that she thought it would burst the cage of her ribs. When she was 20 hands from Lambkill, a cruel smile bent his lips. He extended an arm northward.
Look! I've ended it!
Oh!
Kestrel stumbled to a stop when she saw Ice Plant kneeling by the fire. He rocked back and forth, his handsome face in his hands. A long black braid hung over his right shoulder.
No. Oh, no.
Face your husband!
Tannin took Kestrel's arm in a hurtful grip and forced her to look at Lambkill.
So, you thought you could escape me?
Lambkill moved to only a hand's breadth from Kestrel. His skin had bronzed so deeply from long days on the trading trails that it resembled desiccated leather. Thick wrinkles hung in folds down his neck and made bulges beneath his eyes. Kestrel glared at him and braced her shaking knees. People closed the circle around them, their eyes alert, listening, anxious for the final judgment to be rendered. A few of the young women whispered behind their hands and pointed to Kestrel's belly.
She's at least 8 moons along.
The words enraged Lambkill. His blow struck her in the temple and knocked her to the wet ground. Ice Plant shot to his feet.
No! Lambkill, you said you wouldn't hurt her. You told me you'd just banish her.
Horror pierced Kestrel's heart. She stared dumbly at Ice Plant, like an animal bashed in the head by a hunter's club.
Ice Plant?
Kestrel, I didn't know he'd do this to you. When he caught me, I swear he told me...
Stay out of this, you coward! You're as much to blame as she is.
Ice Plant stepped back. Kestrel stared blindly at him, and a dark abyss opened in her soul.
Lambkill, some chaser says we shouldn't beat our wives. He says that Wolfdreamer watches and listens. We must all...
Sun Chaser? That fool from the seacoast? He's deranged.
Lambkill glared out at the crowd, taking note of each expression, identifying the believers and the doubters.
What's happened since I've been gone? Have you all been sucked into this madness about your ancestors coming back from the land of the dead? I just returned from the Great Northern Lakes. The people there have heard of Sun Chaser, but they don't believe in his new way. How can you? Do you really think that all the mammoths will return if you sing the idiotic song Sun Chaser teaches? The mammoth spirit dance is nonsense.
It's not nonsense, Lambkill.
Ice Plant straightened to his full height.
Sun Chaser has been to the land of the dead. He's talked with the great leaders of our people. Wolfdreamer told
him... Shut up, filth! Do I have to kill you to silence you? Is that what you want? I could change my mind about your fate.
Don't you understand? We have to change. Have to return to the old ways of purity and truth.
You dare to talk to me about purity?
Kestrel's baby shifted suddenly. All eyes turned toward her expectantly, as though she might speak. She lowered a hand to rub her belly.
Shh, my baby, don't cry.
What did you say?
Lambkill slammed a fist into her back and sent her toppling into the mud.
Stand up! Stand up! Do you hear me?
I hear you, husband.
Kestrel got on her knees, then unsteadily rose to her feet. Mud coated her dress. She felt no indignation, no hatred, only a terror that gnawed at the pit of her stomach. Near the fire, Ice Plant had folded his arms tightly across his chest, as if to ease a pain in his heart.
I am a traitor!
Lambkill circled Kestrel.
You all know that. As you know that I was gone, gone! From the moon of turning leaves through the moon of flying snow.
Kestrel's stomach nodded. She had seen him perform 1,000 times. He boasted that he calculated each wave of his hand and tilt of his head to affect the crowd in just the way he wanted. To the outside world, he seemed strong and affable, always in control. Only she knew the real Lamkill, the monster who was born with the darkness. He had such nightmares, every night. And they had been getting worse over the past cycle. Dreams that woke him from sound sleep and brought him awake gasping. That was usually when he beat her. She never knew why. Kestrel watched numbly as Lamkill whirled and strode back to her and pulled a hafted obsidian knife from his belt. Twisting a handful of her waterlogged dress, he slit the soft leather from hide collar to fringed hem and jerked it wide, revealing her huge belly. She staggered to keep standing. Strands of waist-length black hair stuck wetly to her chest, partially covering her milk-heavy breasts. The rest of her 17 summers old body lay bare to the gusting wind. Kestrel saw her mother close her eyes in shame.
So, my wife, if I was gone all autumn, who fathered this child?
You did, my husband. In the first few days after you returned, I am not as far along as I look. I think I am carrying twins.
Liar!
Lamkill appeared to be off balance. He stood stiffly with his hands at his sides, his curled brown fingers tensed like talons while he searched her face. For cycles, he had told her of how much he longed for a son. After a few moments, he spun and glowered questioningly at Iceplant. Iceplant shook his head. Lamkill had been married 4 times and had never fathered a child. Perhaps, finally, his seed had taken root. It would be a great boon to his reputation. A flicker of hope animated Kestrel. He might claim the child, even if he knew it were not his.
Your 2 sisters and your aunt gave birth to twins, Lamkill. Your own mother had twins that died just after birth. Twins run in your bloodline.
Lamkill glowered at Kestrel.
Shall I cut the forsaken brat from your womb to see, Kestrel?
You would kill your own sons, my husband? Wait until they're born. Then you will know I am telling the truth. And I will have time to find an escape.
Owl Woman lifted her head to peer at Kestrel with desperate hope in her eyes. Men stood listening intently.
The truth! I already know the truth!
He stalked across the ground, twisted a fist in Iceplant's hair, and shoved him toward Kestrel. Iceplant did not resist. He came to stand so close that she could count each tiny spiral that encircled the edge of his medicine pouch. Kestrel saw hurt in his eyes and fear for her, but more fear for himself.
Tell everyone! Go on, Iceplant! Tell them you've been bedding my wife for 2 cycles. Every time I went away, you sneaked into my lodge and drove your penis into her.
Yes.
What? Speak up, Iceplant. No one can hear you. Say it again!
Yes. The child is mine.
Lamkill slammed a fist into Iceplant's stomach and kneed him brutally in the groin.
Didn't you think I'd ever find out? Do you think I'm stupid? Fool! If you hadn't agreed to tell me the truth, you'd already be dead. I should never have consented to let Kestrel stay here in the village of her birth. By rights, we should have gone to live in my father's village. It was a kindness I did for her. Knowing that I would be gone for half of the cycle or more, I let her stay here, near her family. And look what came of my generosity.
Don't hurt Kestrel. You promised. You said you wouldn't.
It is my right! It is my right, as her husband, to decide her fate. Isn't that so, old porcupine?
You promised. You promised you'd banish both of us.
Your confession has decided your fate, Iceplant. Isn't that so, Elder? I have the right to choose Iceplant's punishment as well as hers.
It is your right.
And you, Owl Woman?
Lamkill turned to face Kestrel's mother.
What do you think? Your daughter is guilty of incest. She bedded your own dead husband's nephew. What do you think her fate should be?
Kestrel gazed for a long moment into her mother's eyes, and a pain began in her chest, like a wrenching scream working its way up from her soul to her lips.
Oh.
Owl Woman placed a quaking hand on Willow Stem's shoulder and turned her back.
Hear us, Thunder Beings, in beauty it is finished. In beauty it is finished.
Hey-ya, hey-yo, ho-ya.
People blinked away the rain, searching for the shining wings of the Thunder Beings, expecting to see them plunge from the heavens.
No! Grandmother! Mother! Please!
Get Ice Plant out of my way.
Kestrel tugged at her ripped dress, trying to shield herself from the people's eyes and the rain. She watched blindly as Cottontail and Tannin dragged Ice Plant back and shoved him down by the fire. Around him, puddles shimmered radiantly in the firelight.
I am not a cruel man. I love my wife. But more than her, I love my clan and the laws that bind us together. How can I make a mockery of those laws?
But her eyes stayed on Ice Plant, and her ears heard a different voice.
Kestrel, please, I beg you. I want to be with you. Come with me to the sea. My mother's people will take us in. The Otter Clan traces its family line through the women, not through the men. You're my father's brother's daughter. You're not my cousin in their eyes.
We'd never be safe, Iceplant. Lambkill would search the world to find us, and then he would murder all three of us. He knows every chief and every trail. We'd never escape.
I'll protect you from him. Kestrel, listen to me. I love you so much. Come with me.
The abyss in Kestrel's soul yawned wider, threatening to swallow her.
Forgive me, Iceplant. Forgive me.
Iceplant seemed to hear. He looked up at her through tear-filled eyes, then doubled over. The last of Kestrel's soul drained away into the slate-gray echoes of twilight. She felt empty. So empty. Lambkill strode back to stand nose-to-nose with her, blocking her view of Iceplant.
The laws of our people say I may do with you as I wish, woman.
He smiled and lifted his fist. The force of the blow sent Kestrel reeling backward. Lambkill brought up his knife. The obsidian blade glinted.
Incest! Incest!
Lambkill stabbed her bare shoulder, then slashed across her forehead. Hot blood ran into her eyes. Through blurry eyes, she saw Iceplant. He was kneeling before the fire.
I'm going to kill you, wife!
Lambkill lunged at her, his knife aimed at her heart. People rushed forward to witness her death.
Lambkill, please! Just let us go! We'll never come back! You'll never have to worry that...
Not after what you've done to me!
Lambkill swung Kestrel around so he could tighten his arm around her throat, then pressed his mouth to her ear.
You haven't yet asked what I plan to do with Iceplant.
He helped you find me, didn't he? If he... He helped you. You should let him go.
Oh, yes. He helped me. He told me what time you'd left and which trail you'd taken. He even told me where the two of you had planned to meet. And I will let him go. Just so I can hunt him down.
You would break a promise that the entire village heard you make? The elders won't let you do that. The clans will force
and
you-
After I hunt Iceplant down, I'm going to drag him back here and slit him open before your eyes.
Clan Law will forbid it.
Not when I explain to the village that I've changed my mind. That I no longer want your death, but Ice Plant's. Oh, his family will be upset. I'll probably have to give them a few buffalo hides, maybe some shark's teeth from the Southern Ocean. But eventually they'll agree. Everyone knows it's my right to decide your fate. Yes, Kestrel, I'm going to let you live. I want you to suffer for what you've done. The village will disown you. You'll have only me to shield you from their taunts. Only me to feed you. Only me to keep you company.
Lambkill stroked her bared breast with his calloused hand.
But hear me. If I ever find you with another man, I will kill you. You can never run away from me. No one can protect you, and I will find you vulnerable someday, and I will kill you then. Do you understand me?
Lambkill tightened his arm over her throat.
Someone help me! Mother! Mother!
No! In the name of Above Old Man, Lambkill, stop! Stop it!
Kestrel glimpsed Ice Plant running toward her.
Don't hurt her! Punish me! Punish me!
Get back!
No!
Heedlessly, Ice Plant used his fists to beat a way through the crowd. They rolled and kicked in the mud as Kestrel staggered away. The crowd surged forward like a pack of hungry wolves closing in on a wounded doe. Iceplant slammed a fist into Lambkill's stomach, then straddled him and sank his fingers into his throat. Tannin and Cottontail pulled their war clubs and waded into the fight. They jerked Iceplant off of Lambkill and started kicking him in the sides and in the face until blood ran down his cheeks. Iceplant tried to rise, but they hammered him with their clubs, striking his spine, legs, and head, and keeping him down. He huddled, covering his head with his arms. Lambkill crawled to his feet and drew his own war club.
Kestrel, run!
Iceplant threw himself sideways, knocking Tannin's feet out from under him. Then he dove for Lambkill's legs, tackling him and wrestling him to the ground again. As though in a nightmare, Kestrel shoved her way through a group of old women who clawed at her. She dashed down the muddy slope. At the base of the hill, she stumbled into a thicket of head-high sage and stood. Night had swallowed the land, but she knew the worn paths by heart. Which way should she go? Where could she hide? Lambkill would track her. In the mud, it would be easy. How could she...
No!
Kestrel turned. On top of the hill, Tannin and Cottontail held Iceplant, while Lambkill brutally beat him over the head with a war club. Finally, his knees buckled. Lambkill took the knife from his belt. He thrust it into Iceplant's stomach, then sawed upward into the chest cavity. Tannin and Cottontail let him drop to his knees. The crowd backed away. Dark blood gushed from Iceplant's wound. As though fighting to stay alive, he braced a hand on the ground and dug his fingers into the mud. Red foam bubbled at his lips. With great effort, he lifted his head and stared out beyond the village toward Kestrel.
Run.
She thrashed away through the sage.
Run uphill, uphill. Wounded animals always run downhill. Lambkill will expect it. He thinks I'm beaten, that he won't have any trouble finding me. That's why he's not chasing me yet.
Kestrel circled the village, then forced her exhausted legs up the slope until she could look down on the bonfire from the red ridge west of the village.
No! No.
When she saw Iceplant, Kestrel started to shake so badly that she could barely keep standing. He lay on his back, peaceful now. Firelight coated his wide, dead eyes with a patina of pure gold, turning them luminous. Lambkill stood talking to Tannin before the lodge of Old Porcupine. He was smiling. Hatred rose in Kestrel, a hatred so violent, so terrifying in its strength, that it blurred the rest of the world.
I'm going to kill you, my husband. Someday, I will find you vulnerable.
Lightning split the darkness. In the lightning's eerie afterglow, the Mammoth Mountains in the west stood silhouetted like huge beasts, shocked abruptly into stillness. Kestrel clutched her belly and gazed back at the village. Ice Plant's body wavered in the wind-blown shreds of firelight, sometimes there, sometimes not.
I'm going to the sea, Ice Plant, as you wanted, to your mother's people. I pray they take us in.
White hair fell over Oxbalm's eyes as a gust of night wind swept the beach, bringing the pungent odor of salt and sand to his nostrils. He drew his knees closer to his chest and peered at the old woman beside him. Sumac sat like a stone sentinel, her wrinkled face gleaming with spray, and she watched the beach through eyes even more ancient than his own. He gently patted her knee, and she twined her fingers with his. OtterClan Village nestled in the fir forest behind them. Everyone else slept. Only Oxbalm and Sumac had been up all night. They had sat together, watching the Star People sail their canoes through the dark seas in the land of the dead, listening to the night birds, watching the fluorescence of the surf, remembering. Through the eyes of their souls, they could penetrate the veil of the present and peer into the past. Only there could Oxbalm still see huge herds of mammoths roaming the coast. It reminded him of the days when he had been one of the greatest of his people's hunters, of the days when there had been too many mammoths to count. No one had starved back then. There had been no sicknesses that lasted for moons at a time. For too many winters to count, Oxbalm had watched the number of mammoths dwindle, until now only a few lumbering animals with haunted eyes remained. He hadn't had a mammoth steak in 6 long cycles, and he yearned for one desperately.
Mother Ocean, I felt you tugging at my soul. I got up out of my warm hides and came. Tell me what you need. Send me a sign.
Sumac said nothing, letting him talk to the mother alone. But she squeezed his fingers more tightly and cast a brief glance over her shoulder toward their lodge in the village. She was worried about their 3 grandchildren, the 2 boys and the little girl. Saber-toothed cats had been prowling close to the village in the past cold moon, hoping to catch a child to eat. Mountain Lake, Balsam, and Horseweed had been living with them since the death of their mother in the fever 2 cycles ago. Singing Moss had been Oxbalm and Sumac's last living child, and grief over her had almost killed Sumac. Oxbalm squeezed Sumac's hand in return and focused his faded eyes on the black expanse of water. He knew the mother. He'd canoed out into her far reaches, singing to her, studying her many colors. When Oxbalm had been filled with the brashness of youth, he'd canoed out so far that he couldn't see land at all. The mother spoke to men so bold, her voice soft and muted. And the mother had started speaking to him at sunset yesterday, calling to him, demanding that he come sit beside her.
Oh, I'm tired, Sumac.
Just a little longer. If the mother hasn't sent you a sign by dawn, we'll go back. Do you think it has to do with Sun Chaser?
I don't know.
Oxbalm put an arm around her shoulders and pulled her close. She'd turned 55 last cycle, but she wore the bitter winters better than Oxbalm did. Though wrinkles incised her high forehead, her long straight nose and pointed chin looked as perfect as they had on the day he'd met her. Her full lips had sunken like his had, as her teeth had fallen out. But he didn't mind. She was still beautiful to him. Sumac's gray brows drew together.
The Mammoth Spirit Dance starts day after tomorrow, and Sun Chaser isn't here yet. This will be the 4th dance he's missed this cycle. Why has he stopped coming? All the surrounding villages will be here. His absence will frighten people. It's as though he's lost faith in the dance himself. He started it. How could that happen?
I don't think he's lost faith, Sumac. He still sings for the mammoths. 5 moons ago, he told me he'd been dreaming every day. You know how hard that is. Keep your faith in him. He's the last great dreamer left to the Sea Peoples.
Legend spoke of a time when camels and mastodons had covered the hills as thickly as the spring grasses. But now a man considered himself lucky if he saw a few tens of tens in his entire lifetime. The cheetahs had become so rare that Oxbaum could barely remember what they looked like. And the giant short-faced bears had almost vanished, though Oxbaum had to admit he wasn't sorry to see them go. The bears ran with the fleetness and speed of horse, possessed the ferociousness of an enraged lion, and stood as tall as a man at the shoulder. Sunchaser said that all of the big animals, from mastodons to cheetahs, had heard their deaths sung on the wind and had climbed onto the wings of the Thunder Beings to fly across the sea to the land of the dead, to punish humans for overhunting them. The dwindling supply of big meat animals had turned the four-legged hunters bold. Often they sneaked close to the village to grab a child or a doddering elder. What kind of sign was it when hunter turned on hunter?
But we have other dreamers. Not as great as Sunchaser, it's true, but Catstraw?
Catstraw isn't much of a dreamer. For all that, he lounges around his lodge day in and day out, claiming to be dreaming. He never helps around the village. Have you ever seen him hunt? No. Fish? On rare occasions, when he can't pay somebody else to fish for him. Has he ever gone on a war raid? I remember one raid I led when Catstraw was 17 summers. All the other young men had readied themselves, but Catstraw ran and hid in his mother's lodge, shrieking. He's not much of a man.
Oh, you never liked Catstraw, even when he was a boy.
It's irritating, Sumac, when a 5 summers old boy tries to tell you he knows more than you do.
Well, he's a dreamer now. Maybe Mother Ocean never intended him to be a hunter or a warrior.
If Catstraw's such a fine dreamer, why did he start having dreams only 5 winters ago?
Well, that's when Running Salmon died. You know that. We needed a new dreamer.
Running Salmon was smart. Before she went, she told us that Sun Chaser would be the next great dreamer for the people. I guess Catstraw thought differently. But Running Salmon was right. Only Sun Chaser could bring all of the mountain and sea villages together and keep them together to work for a single purpose, keeping the mammoths alive in our world. Catstraw would have driven everybody away with his whining and...
You think he's a false dreamer?
I didn't say that. I wonder, that's all. He was always a strange child, kept to himself a lot. And then, ruining not one but 2 marriages that his mother worked so hard to negotiate. Some of his kin are still struggling to pay back the wedding gifts.
Oh, he was so spoiled that he forgot he had clan obligations.
Yes. All of his life, he's refused to do anything that didn't please him.
Oh, you're being too hard on him, Oxbaum. I think he tries to help people. Some of Catstraw's dreams have come true.
And just as many haven't.
Well, at least Catstraw is close at hand. Does anyone know where Sunchaser is?
The last I heard, he was up in the mountains at Brushnut Village. The illness had struck, and they begged him to come home and heal. He couldn't refuse to help his relatives. Before that, he was moving through the other mountain villages, singing and dancing for people, performing healings. I don't know why he hasn't been back to see us. His last trip to the sea was when he came to the Mammoth Spirit Dance held at Whalebeard Village 4 moons ago. But he has so many villages that he visits, it's no wonder.
Oxbaum could feel the change, the shift of power. He shivered and cocked his head to listen to the mother.
What are you...
Shh! Oxbaum raised a hand, aware of the sudden stillness that even hushed the regular booming of the surf. Power spun eddies in the air, a heaviness growing. A pack of four dogs raced out toward the beach, peering at something down the shoreline that Oxbaum couldn't see. After a few moments, they created such a commotion that people in the village came crawling out of their lodges, their hair wild with sleep.
What is it? What's wrong?
Oxbaum braced a hand on her shoulder for support while he got to his feet. In the brightening dawn, the beach glistened and sparkled. Oxbaum took a step forward. For a long time, he saw only the surge of the waves and the brightening shape of the big island off the coast.
Oxbaum?
Sumac stood.
Shh! Listen.
Against the dark ocean, something moved. Oxbaum had to squint his old eyes to see the sinuous trunk that lifted and splashed the water. The mammoth lay on its side, dying. And there lay another, and another, and... The village dogs bounded back and forth, afraid to get too close, terrified by the huge animals.
Oh, no. What the...
Well, look! There's another one! And another!
Up and down the beach, dark forms appeared, dozens of them. 20? No, 30 or more. Their earthy musk carried on the salty wind. They walked out of the trees and waded into the sea, the trunk of one holding tight to the tail of another. The little calves fought the current to stay beside their mothers. The mammoths walked out as far as they could, then started swimming.
What? What are they doing?
The domes of the mammoth's heads vanished, and Oxbaum went rigid with fear. Huge bodies began to bob to the surface.
Oh, no! Blessed Mother Ocean!
Tusks gleamed, some jagged and broken, spearing the sand as the dead animals near shore rocked with the force of the water. Farther out, two old bulls swam with all their might, heading westward. Three younger bulls followed behind them, their trunks up, their massive heads tipped back so far that their tusks thrust straight up at Brother Sky. Then a wave began to drag them all under. Sumac pressed a hand to her throat, clutching it as if in pain. Some of the villagers gathered around them, silent, wary. No one had seen a herd so large in cycles. The dogs had gone slinking back into the village, their tails between their legs, and now they stood close by their masters, watching with their ears pricked.
I don't understand.
Tears stung Oxbaum's eyes. Why would mammoths, their numbers already so decimated by human hunters, drown themselves? He shook his head. Then awe slackened his face as comprehension dawned.
It's the sign, Sumac. This is why Mother Ocean called me out tonight.
The sign of what?
Oxbaum started forward, but Sumac's hand closed on his wrist, halting him.
No, don't go. I'm frightened.
So am I. Something's happened. Something terrible. Mammoth above is trying to warn us.
He removed her hand, patted it gently, and hobbled across the sand on his rickety legs. Sumac hurried after him.
Wait! Oxbaum!
Find young Horseweed. Send him to Brushnut Village. Tell him to bring Sunchaser back. At the point of a dart, if necessary.
Kestrel clenched her teeth as another contraction hit her. The pain seemed to twist her inside out. Her water had broken just before dawn, warm fluid draining down the insides of her thighs, and the contractions had started coming closer together.
Moon Early. No, Above Old Man, please. How can I run with a newborn baby? Lamkit will find us both.
She braced her hands against the yellow-brown limestone and bit back her cries. She stood in a narrow cleft, rock-filled, clotted with duff and weathered sticks that had been deposited by the rain runoff. The cleft sliced a V into the bluff that overlooked the Big Spoonwood River. 200 hands below, muddy water rushed along, whole trees tumbling in the swift current. Across the vast expanse of water, she could make out the caves that pocked the bluff on the opposite side. Did this side have similar caves? Should she chance finding shelter in one of them? Kestrel wrung some of the water from her long hair, and as she looked down, she saw a white chert flake reflecting beneath the shallow flow of water. She bent to pick it up. As big as the palm of her hand and very sharp, it might come in useful, perhaps to cut reeds with, to build a raft. But the rain was falling more heavily, too heavily to think of trying to cross the river today. Though dozens of crevices cracked the bluff, only this narrow cut had appeared to lead down to the water, and it was becoming steeper as she progressed. Here, in this crack in the ground leading to the river, she could feel the footfalls of her husband in her heart. Fear took every bit of her strength. The pain built again.
Stay quiet. Keep moving. You must keep moving.
When the agony eased, Kestrel inched her hands forward over the wet stone, descending the cleft slowly. The shower soaked her to the bone. Ankle-deep trickles of water drenched her moccasins and froze her swollen feet. She'd haphazardly tied the torn front of her dress together, but it provided scant protection from the bitter gusts of wind. Like icicles, they penetrated the soaked antelope hide and stabbed at her breasts and belly.
It's going to get much colder.
She bolstered her courage as she studied the wide, silt-laden river that rushed and foamed where the cleft joined the sandy shore below. Runoff from the heavy rains had caused the water to overflow its banks. Along the shore, a thick layer of dirty froth had accumulated. Reeds, which usually stood at the edge of the water, were visible 20 hands into the current. They poked ragged tips through the surface as if desperate for the sun's warm touch.
Go on, move! Move!
She had to force her exhausted legs to carry her the rest of the way down the narrow defile. Beyond the bluff on the opposite shore, the broken land began its rise toward the Mammoth Mountains. Kestrel gazed at the white mist of snow that shrouded the foothills and wanted to weep. She would be safe there, but she couldn't go. Not yet. Not until the baby came. She had to find shelter. Every moment that Kestrel delayed, Lambkill would be closing in. She tried to stay on the rocks, where her moccasins would leave no prints, but she'd had almost no sleep in 3 days, and sometimes she forgot where she was, why she was running. She kept making mistakes, leaving a heel print here, a snapped twig there. Her trail would be clear to him. Another contraction bent her double. She squatted on the bank and propped her hands on the ground between her spread knees, letting the pain have its way. When it ended, she couldn't stop trembling. Kestrel rose and plodded northward along the Big Spoonwood River. She'd been here as a child, and she remembered that the people had built rafts and gathered near a fist-shaped boulder that marked the narrowest stretch of the river. Where was the boulder? She squinted, but she couldn't see it. Around the southern bend in the shoreline? Even at the age of 6 summers, the raft trip had seemed to take forever.
The river isn't as wide as it looks, remember?
It took no more than 2 hands of time to cross, but that was in late summer. The water was warm.
No, Kestrel, don't think about that. You must put the river between yourself and Lankel.
Kestrel waded into the frigid water. She took 2 steps and staggered when she saw her shattered reflection staring back at her. Massive bruises covered her face, rising to frame the knife gash that slanted across her forehead. Her left eye had swollen almost shut.
Someday I will find him vulnerable. I swear it.
She clamped her jaw and slogged downstream, doubling back to the south, passing the opening to the stone cleft that she had descended earlier. The swirling current would wash away most of her tracks. Perhaps the rain would cover the rest of them. If she could get to the rocky terrace that jutted into the river in the distance, she would leave no tracks. As she rounded the curve in the shore, the fist-shaped boulder loomed into view. Kestrel started to run. Where the river curved back to the west ahead, the shore vanished. The water had risen so much that it crashed into the bluff and threw foamy lances 20 hands high. Dozens of the tiny round caves speckled the limestone. Like huge tear-filled eyes, they seemed to watch her as she ran toward the fist-shaped boulder. When the first squeezing of the next contraction began, Kestrel veered out of the river. She headed straight toward one of the caves that gouged the bluff above the waterline. Along the way, she pulled two handfuls of fresh grass and picked up a small, dry stick of chokecherry. The ledge dropped away to a bastion of rocks, where water roared as it attacked the stones. Perhaps its fury would cover the sound of her cries. When she reached the entry, she fell to her knees and crawled inside. Darkness blinded her. With it came the overpowering odor of pack rat dung and the faint sweetness of moss. As her eyes adjusted, she could make out the green velvet tufts that veined the cracks in the rocks. Kestrel blinked. Strange paintings covered the walls. Faded, old. Six square-bodied red figures curved upward from the floor, following the arc of the cave, so that their eyes peered down at Kestrel from the center of the ceiling. Zigzagging lines of power issued from their open mouths, shooting toward the floor. Though they bore human bodies, their faces resembled bears, or maybe lions, with their teeth bared. They seemed to be crowding around her, watching, waiting.
Blessed star people. Oh, what is this place?
Kestrel traced a magical sign in the air to protect her from any evil spirits who might be lurking close by. She kept her eyes on the figures as she stooped to arrange the things she had gathered so they'd be close at hand. She began the birth song.
We crouch before you above all men, tossing in pain, tossing.
A faint growl rose. It seemed to be coming from the lion men. Their red eyes glistened, as though alive and angry that she had invaded their sanctuary.
It's the river, or the thunder echoing through the cave. That's all it is. We crouch before you, buffalo men, tossing in pain, tossing in pain. Our blood flows as yours once did, tossing in pain, tossing in pain. Above, old man, hear our prayer. Lead this child through the dark, through the tunnel into the light born from your blood. We crouch before you, tossing in.
Kestrel heard lightning strike the bluff above her. As the pain intensified, Kestrel wished desperately for her mother.
You're alone. You have to do this by yourself.
She slipped her torn dress off over her head and threw it down by the sharp chert flake and handfuls of grass. Then she squatted in the opening of the cave and clenched the chokecherry stick between her teeth. The opening spanned barely half of her body length, making it easy for her to brace her back against the dry stone on one side and her hands against the other side. Her legs shook so violently that she feared they might not hold her through the coming ordeal. It took only moments before sweat ran hotly from Kestrel's naked body. She pushed with all of the strength left to her. And then at last, the baby emerged head first.
It's a girl, Iceblend. I've given you a daughter.
With shaking hands, Kestrel lifted the chert flake and sliced one of the fringes from her dress, then knotted it around the girl's umbilical cord and cut it. Kestrel's arms trembled as she lifted her daughter by her feet and shook her. Then Kestrel's groping fingers located the handfuls of fragrant grass with which to wipe the little girl clean. The infant's crying terrified Kestrel. Lambkill had ears like a lynx. Assuming she could cross the river, it would take another 10 or 12 days of steady walking to reach Otterclan village. Hiding her trail would be hard enough. How could she hope to lose Lambkill while carrying a crying baby? Tenderly, she placed her daughter amidst the soft folds of her antelope-hide dress. Pain twisted inside her again.
Oh, help!
Kill me! Above old man, help!
She pushed and pushed again. She shifted to spread her legs a little wider. She braced her hands on the opposite wall again and held her breath and pushed and prayed until the second child emerged. A boy. Tiny. Beautiful. Kestrel knotted a fringe as she had done before and cut his cord, then weakly gripped his arm and jerked on it. She did not clean him. A short while later, the afterbirth flooded out onto the floor. For another two fingers of time, Kestrel had to sit slumped in the blood before she could marshal enough energy to rise. She locked her knees, aware of the watery droplets of her blood that fell to splat on the stone in starburst patterns. All the while, her daughter urgently waved tiny fists, and the boy lay on his back in the pool of blood. Kestrel picked up the boy and cradled his head to her breast. The feel of that soft mouth against her flesh stabbed her to the soul. She patted his back gently. When the infant had finished and lay quietly sleeping in her arms, Kestrel rose, hips aching, and carried him to the entry of the cave. The wind had picked up. It whipped her drenched hair into a black web that obscured her face. Naked and cold, she stood watching the whitecaps that undulated across the Big Spoonwood River. She tried to close her ears to the wails of her daughter.
Do it, Kestrel. You must.
The boy squirmed and shivered. Kestrel's heart ached. She turned to peer back at the cleft in the bluff from where she descended to the river. No man stood anywhere in view, but Lambkill was coming, she knew. Somehow, some way, he would find her. Despite the wind and the rain that obscured her trail, and no matter how far or how long she ran, he would find her. Two crying babies would make it certain.
The Otter Clan, they trace their lineage through women.
Kestrel cradled her son in her arms and stepped out onto the ledge in front of the cave. Her arms trembled so violently that she almost couldn't keep hold of the baby as she walked down the deer trail. Muddy brown water rumbled by below, speckled with juniper needles, twigs, and bits of spinning grass. Kestrel knelt on the sandy shore at the base of the bluff and laid her son down in front of her. Rain beaded on his bloody face. His blue eyes seemed to be searching for her, moving back and forth frantically. He kicked his legs.
Oh, spirits, please, I can't do this. Shh, it's all right. It's all right, my son. Try to understand. I love you. My son, your death may keep your sister alive. And me, forgive me. I love you so much.
Kestrel tipped her face up to the cloudy sky.
Hear me, star people, I pray for you to come. Hear me, star people, I pray for you to come. Lead this child to the land of the dead. Take good care of him. Hear me, star people, I pray for you to come. Hear me, star people. I pray for you to come.
She turned and walked weakly up the trail toward the cave.
Oh, spirit, help me. Make him stop crying. I won't be able to stand it.
Kestrel broke into a run. Kestrel ducked back into the cave and sank down atop her antelope-hide dress next to her daughter. She could still hear the faint wails of her son. Beside her, the little girl lay as still as a corpse. For a moment, Kestrel didn't breathe. Then her daughter blinked and looked up at the lion men who hovered over them. Time seemed to whirl and spin in the wells of those blurry newborn eyes. growl began again, like animals calling warnings in the night. The sound sent a chill up Kestrel's spine.
Blessed Mammoth above!
Her daughter's eyes sought hers, and the girl frowned as though in answer. The longer Kestrel gazed into those eyes, the brighter they grew, until they were so brilliant and beautiful that it hurt to look at them. Her soul seemed to twist and detach from her body, to go flying up, up, as if it had climbed onto the wings of soaring thunder beings. The sound snapped Kestrel from her euphoria. Trembling, she brought up the edges of her hide dress and tucked them around her daughter's body, then moved the baby to her breast to nurse.
Twisting Cloud Girl, that will be your name, my daughter. For your eyes.
Mother? Mother?
The unnamed boy called into the black, glittering womb that encased him, but no one answered. No one. Not a breath stirred the dark haze, and loneliness ate at his soul like a starving beast.
Mother! I want to live! Let me live! I can help you!
The ebony weave of the womb unraveled into strands that swirled and changed their shades, reweaving into stunning patterns, like the face of Brother Rainbow twisted into multiple interlacing spirals that spun outward into infinity. Beautiful. The boy sucked his thumb as the colorful threads began to sway gently, rocking him back and forth like an invisible hand pushing the side of a cradle board suspended between two trees. He fell into terrible tears.
Mother! Why can't you hear me? I'm not dead, Mother! I'm here! Alive in the stars! Let me be with you! Please, Mother! I won't be any trouble! I promise! I just want to be close to you! Mother! Let me be close to you!
The rainbow fires changed again. That soothed the boy's fears like a cool salve on a hot wound. He started to fall asleep.
Why can't you hear me? Mother, I need you. I need you to hear me. I want to live.
Oxbaum stretched to reach the meat that clung to the interior of the mammoth's ribcage. The entire village had dedicated the morning to skinning the carcass and then to slitting the belly open and hauling out the heavy mass of intestines. The liver had been cut up into slabs and immediately carried away by the children, who giggled and laughed as the red-black blood coated their skin. The lungs, logged with salt water, had been hacked away and thrown into the surf for the seagulls to scream and fight over, and the villagers had moved on to other carcasses. Later, after dark, the crabs would swarm over the lungs as the tide came in. Oxbaum sucked at his lips as he stared at the thick yellow artery that hung limply from the backbone. Someone had already been tired when he'd cut the giant heart out, for the artery had been hacked raggedly. This old cow had almost no fat around her ribs. She was little more than skin and bones, but Oxbaum's mouth watered just the same. Tough mammoth tasted better than no mammoth at all. The thick quartzite flake had gone slippery from blood, and the joint fever that plagued his hands made holding the flat tool painful. The villagers' bloody feet had tracked in sand, but the footing in the coagulated goo on the ribs below remained precarious. Pulling on a flap of meat with one hand, Oxbaum used his serrated quartzite to strip the flesh from the heavy bone, trimming ligaments and tendons as he went. This was the easy work, suitable to an old man. And, he shot a glance from the corner of his eye, to lazy dreamers who thought themselves superior to hard work. Oxbaum swallowed his disgust and continued to cut the strip of meat loose, sawing along the rib on one side and then the other, exposing a shaft of daylight as he peeled the meat down. Catch Straw worked silently beside him, his obsidian knife glinting in the light that filtered through the layer of clouds. Tall and skinny, he resembled a big-headed bird. The salty air had turned his gray-streaked black hair into a damp mass. His hooked nose protruded from the middle of his face like a beak. 49 summers old, he looked much older, as though the labor of ruining 2 marriages and alienating half of his relatives had worn on him. Sumac and their little granddaughter, Mountain Lake, sat cross-legged in the bottom of the mammoth, covered with blood, slicing the tenderloin into strips. Mountain Lake had gobbled down so much raw meat that her pretty little face bore a crust that looked like thick red paint. This was the first such feast in her 6 summers. Up and down the beach, people butchered and skinned. Dogs lay happily in the sun, their bellies bloated. Above them all, insects hovered in clouds of glittering membranous wings. A ring of guards stood along the perimeter of the butchering ground, their sharp eyes alert for the big cats. Sunlight glinted on polished dart shafts where they rested ready in the hooked atlatls. Beyond the guards, hidden in the screen of forest, saber-toothed cats watched from the shadows. When the deep-throated growls carried against the wind, the guards would brandish their darts, and the cats would hiss and paw the air threateningly.
Growl. One day your voices will be stilled.
Catchstraw turned to face Oxbaum.
What do you mean, stilled?
The cats have power. All silent killers do. But not even that will save them. Our young men have atlatls and finely crafted darts. Those cats out there in the trees, they're hungry. Their stomachs will overcome their caution, and young Two Toes, or one of the others, will drive a dart through them. Men are smarter hunters than cats.
Catchstraw half-heartedly pressed his thumb against his obsidian blade.
Time to resharpen this.
Catchstraw raised smoky eyes to Oxbaum.
Do not underestimate power, Oxbaum. It is greater than any hunter, no matter how skilled he is in the ways of animals. Someday power may come hunting you, and no dart of yours will kill it.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I know a great deal, old man.
Oxbaum held his tongue and went back to his work, forcing himself to think about the big cats. Yes, now they kept to the shadows, unwilling to show themselves. But Oxbaum knew that when darkness fell, they would fight all night over the butchered carcasses. Was that the image Catchstraw wanted to conjure with his talk of power? That of a cat hiding in the shadows by day, prowling ferociously at night? He'd better be careful not to say that aloud to many people. Somebody might suspect him of being a witch and sneak up and bash his brains out.
Catchstraw, a witch?
What's funny?
Oh, the very idea of it. You don't act like a dreamer, Catchstraw. Power, dreaming. They leave tracks on a man, the way a deer leaves tracks on a damp forest trail. And I can't see you with saber-toothed power or lion power. No, yours would be badger power. Very loud and vicious sounding. But if your victim didn't bolt at the noise, you'd stop halfway and run back for your hole. Yes, badger. That's what your power would be. What did you say?
I said that nobody should be laughing out here. This is a very solemn occasion.
Yes. We are all worried about the meaning of the drownings, but this is also a wonderful time. We'll have new lodges from the hides and more meat than we can eat. Listen to the people. They sound so happy.
Yes, they do. You ought to be out there telling them to be quiet. They've probably already offended the spirits of the mammoths, but then you don't mind offending anything, do you? Not even power.
We did not hunt these mammoths, Catchstraw. They gave themselves to us. I don't know why, but we certainly can't spurn their gift by leaving them to rot on the shore. And accepting their gift makes people happy.
Don't blame me for what's going to happen. I've been spending every spare moment in the sweat lodge, purifying myself and praying.
Good. I'm glad. Some of us need more of that than others.
What does that mean?
I wish Sun Chaser were here, that's what. He could tell us what this means.
Meaning I can't? Haven't I been doing a good job leading the Mammoth Spirit Dance?
Yes, you have.
But not good enough, is that it? That's why you decided to postpone the latest Mammoth Spirit Dance for a week, isn't it? Hoping that Sunchaser would arrive to lead it.
It's not meant to shame you, Catstraw. Sunchaser is the founder of the dance. He is the one that Wolfdreamer revealed the dance to. And now I'd better go check on the fat rendering. I promised Fernleaf I'd be by long ago. Yes.
Oxbaum turned, smoothed his hand over Sumac's gray head, and stepped out of the mammoth carcass onto the sand. Sumac gave him a knowing look. She had managed to slice up one of the melon-shaped kidneys. Little Mountain Lake crawled to her feet.
Grandfather, can I come? Sometimes Fernleaf gives me a piece of fried fat.
Sure. Come along. Maybe she'll give us both a piece.
Will you tell me a story while we eat them?
Of course.
Mountain Lake ran to hug Oxbaum around the leg.
Oxbaum, are you really leaving before we finished our discussion?
It is finished, Catchstraw.